You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to another episode of the Red Reporter Podcast. I'm your host, Wick. We are coming to you on, Thursday night. Yes, Thursday night. Game one of the St. Louis Cardinals series in Great American Ballpark. Sonny Gray was positively brilliant tonight. Only went five innings because his pitch count was pushing 100, but struck out 10 guys. Took a no-hitter into the fifth inning and finished with only one hit and three walks allowed. No earned runs. Stretching his career best scoreless streak to 18 innings, which is the good news in Cincinnati Reds land these days. Unfortunately, the bad news is it's also the day after they got shellacked 17-7 by the Washington Nationals for their fourth loss in a row. It completed a sweep at the hands of the Nationals. One of those moments where you look up and say, hey, when you're, seven games under 500, you can't afford to lose any games, much less get swept, much less get beaten 17-7 with Trevor Bauer on the mound having allowed nine earned runs, which was the most he's ever allowed in his big league history. So kind of a bit of a tipping point in Reds land right now. The pipe dreams that we had for the longest time about actually making the postseason this year appear to be a little bit more of a long shot than they ever were, especially now that we've only got, 42-ish games left in this season. So here to kind of break down what we've got on our hands at this point, we've got a couple veteran Red reporters in Cincinnati. We've got former Fearless leader Brandon Grayling. BK, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Wick. How's it going?
It's going well. It's weird. There's so many good things about this Reds team and about what they've done and about where they are. You want to be excited about it. It's the first August 14th, 15th that we've had where there's still relevance in 6 years. But they're still kind of stumbling and tripping and falling over themselves. So
yeah, it's they took all the excitement of the Aquino game is I guess what we're calling it, and then they had four must win games in a row that they lost all four.
Yeah. Yeah, 10-1 over the Cubs at home in the biggest series in Great American Ballpark in 6 years. Got to within, 3.5 games back of the second wild card, three games from the 500 mark. Aquino blasts three home runs. They wreck the Cubs and then just completely fall on their face after that. Joining us in Charlottesville, Virginia, we've got Mitchell Clark, the Arkansas, not Virginia Reds fan. Mitch, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not a lot. Finally got to see this team play in person just in time for
oh, man.
Went to D.C. for Tuesday night's game and saw an offense put up one run on a guy who was pushing a 7 ERA on the season. So kind of like what you'd expect in 2019.
Yeah, but at least you didn't get up there for the 17-7 game, because that 17-7 game, that's a polite way of putting the fact that it was 17-4 at one point. Yeah, it just kind of seems like the way the Reds have been all season is what you've seen play out in the last week, which is pick up some big wins, look like they're building momentum, and then just completely have it reverse immediately before they could ever get anything going significantly beyond that. They're 55-55 after their 1-8 start. And you look up at this team and they basically have all of the recipes that you get in 500 teams, which is lack of consistency, lack of big time production offensively when you need it the most, and bullpen issues, which is something that we didn't see to start the season, but has certainly jumped up lately. I guess is it, you know, I wrote last night that it basically is stick a fork in the Reds season at this juncture. They're 56-63, 7.5 games back of the closest possible last-ditch effort wild card spot, and they're behind 12 of the 15 National League teams right now. What are your thoughts on where the Reds are at this juncture? And obviously we saw David Hernandez DFA'd and move on, and Jared Hughes claimed by the Philadelphia Phillies today, which kind of continues a trend of turning over the 2019 leaf and looking beyond 2019. What are your thoughts on where the Reds are, both in 2019 and in this stage of the rebuild, and whether or not they're finally decisioning to punt 2019, so to speak, really is the right one, which is something that we've seen happen this week. Arf, what do you think, man?
You know, I don't really think, as far as how the front office is thinking, it's any different than it was at the trade deadline. You know, they made that move to get Trevor Bauer for 2019, and, you know, they hoped maybe this team can put a run together. They made that move to get Trevor Bauer for the 2020 run and hoping that, you know, maybe they can string some wins together and push for the playoffs in 2019. And so I think the last week, even though they, like you said, they got within 3.5 games of the wild card after the Cubs series, and, you know, things were looking up, the last four games have just shown that 2020 is still a goal, and the moves that they've made in the last week with, you know, getting rid of Hughes and Hernandez, and then, you know, signing guys like Freddy Galvis and Gausman, it's just furthering that, those moves along.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to note at the transactions as a whole. You look at what they did at the deadline, and you look at what's happened in this August non-waiver trade period, but waiver claim period, which is an interesting development in its own right. What the Reds have done is they've jettisoned Scooter Gennett and Yasiel Puig. They've let David Hernandez go and Jared Hughes go, all guys who weren't under contract beyond 2019. And obviously Hughes had an option, but I think today's transaction pretty well signaled that they weren't going to pick that up this winter. And in the process, they brought in Trevor Bauer. They've claimed Kevin Gausman. They've claimed Freddy Galvis, all guys who have team control for 2020. You look at the bulk of those transactions, they all look good on paper. They've all looked good for the most part, aside from Bauer yesterday in 2019. But then you also look at the guys that that's given playing time to. And it's given playing time to Aristides Aquino, who has absolutely destroyed the ball since coming up to the big leagues. It's given time to Josh Van Meter, who has similarly hit the snot out of the ball and gotten on base at a phenomenal clip. All of those moves don't signal that 2019 was a punt. They've gotten better by all of those moves, including getting rid of Puig and including getting rid of Scooter. But still, even that has not been enough to make 2019 some sort of miraculous recovery. PK, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the line that we heard from the front office around the deadline was kind of lip service a little bit. They were talking about, oh, we're still in it, we're still, you know, in contention, and, you know, the moves that they were making weren't really reflecting that. Obviously, getting rid of Scooter Gennett and Puig being the big two. But, you know, I think that these kinds of moves are things that I think we have been wanting them to do in past years. That, you know, even last year, when you look at when they had Matt Harvey here, you know, at the trade deadline last year, we were saying, hey, let's get rid of Matt Harvey, just get something for him, give someone else his innings. And it seemed like they just couldn't bear to do even just that move. And this year I think we've seen a huge step forward in just kind of the urgency of getting guys playing time, getting Aquino playing time, getting, you know, Josh Van Meter in there, getting Matt Bowman, you know, back in the bullpen today. Guys who, you know, you have under contract for next year. You know, Jared Hughes isn't going to help you next year. Why not give his innings to Matt Bowman? Why not give his innings to Joel Kuhnel and see what you got? See if, you know, maybe one of those guys will be a piece for next year's team. And, you know, this is the time to do that. And it's great that – I think it's great that they're actually kind of taking that step. I don't know why Jose Iglesias is still around and getting as much playing time as he is, but I think all the rest of the moves they made have been great.
You know, that's a good point about Iglesias, and it's something we kind of peripherally touched on in the Red Reporter Slack channel earlier today. But it revolves around this newfangled August transaction system, which is no trades, but players getting claimed. And what you're seeing is a lot of guys who either are pending free agents on teams that aren't winning anything this year, and they're willing to let them go, which is what you saw with Hughes today, going to the Phillies, who look very much more competitive for a wild card spot right now and need that back in depth and are, you know, willing to pay $750,000 of his salary to find out if he can recapture the form he had last year, which admittedly was very, very good. But you're also seeing guys like Gausman, like Galvis, on rebuilding teams that have decently large financial obligations on them right now, but no pure commitment because Gausman's got one more arbitration year. Freddie Galvis has an option for next year. The Reds could end up paying both those guys to keep around, and it might cost them a total of like $17 million to do so. But they don't have to. They've got that 50-game window roughly to see what they've got in both of them and kind of see how things play out. If you look at the rest of the Reds roster right now, they still have a couple guys who fit that profile that, hey, if the Reds don't make this miraculous run, and granted they do have the Padres and the Marlins and the Pirates coming up for a 9-game stretch next week and who the hell knows, but if they don't make this miraculous run back into a playoff spot, Iglesias is a guy who might get claimed. You know, he might get put on waivers and might get claimed because he's a phenomenal defensive infielder, one of the best in the game at shortstop. But you also look at their pitching staff and you see a guy like Alex Wood, who the Reds obviously wanted to be a bigger part of the staff this year. And they're paying him, what, $8, $9 million to be a part of that pitching staff this year. But back issues sapped so much of what he was supposed to provide them this season. And they've already kind of moved on from him as far as I'm concerned, because they went out and got Bauer, who looks to be kind of the Wood for 2020, if you think about it that way. What are your thoughts on the idea that maybe they're still giving Alex Wood starts and maybe they're still giving Jose Iglesias starts because they want those guys to get claimed too, and it's a way to move on from them because they're valuable assets to other teams out there. BK, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a possibility. I think we're still kind of trying to figure out what this new trade deadline system will mean for baseball. I think it's kind of a work in progress as far as what we're seeing, because it's not something we've seen before. But, you know, it's definitely interesting because it's like I feel like even with a guy like Iglesias, you know, if the Reds were going to get rid of him at the end of the season, you would think that they would have tried to do something for him at the deadline, even if, you know, it's just a straight up, you know, maybe get a lottery ticket like you did with Scooter Gennett, you know, maybe, you know, get whatever you can for him at that point. But, you know, it's this waiver system is, you know, really you're just having someone take its salary and you're not actually getting a prospect back. You're not getting anything back except for really just the playing time that you would have for another player. So yeah, I don't know how much of it's just that.
Yeah, you look at like the way that there aren't a lot of new waiver claims and then negotiating a deal between the teams that – they claim the player and the holding player. It's either you let him go with all the salary obligations involved, or you pull him back and that's it.
So, yeah, are these still the revocable waivers? Are those still working the same way?
I think so. And if a player goes unclaimed, you can't put them back on revocable waivers either. So whereas beforehand, teams, I think, used to put everybody on waivers. And if they cleared, then they had the opportunity to trade them whenever they wanted to. It's almost like now they're hesitant to put them on waivers because if they clear, you can't put them back on a week and a half later. Two starting shortstops, Xander Bogaerts and Gleyber Torres, get injured. If Jose Iglesias has already cleared waivers in August, you can't put him back on waivers and see if he gets claimed again. So it's almost like you're waiting to find out if there's a specific need that comes up because, you know, while you're splitting hairs on all of this, if the Reds aren't going to the playoffs this year, which it certainly looks like they're not, if Alex Wood and Jose Iglesias get claimed right now and all you do is just let them go to their newfangled team, you're saving what? Probably $3 million total in salary, which it's a drop in the bucket to the $12 billion baseball industry. But for a Reds team that opened with a record payroll this year, that has gone out and spent that kind of money to take on Kevin Gausman and Freddie Galvis, if you can get it back on the guys that aren't going to be a part of 2020 by doing that, maybe you do it, you know, and you make a cash neutral move. Arf, what do you think, man?
Yeah, kind of like what BK said, it's definitely been interesting to watch how teams have handled this because, you know, they're all handling, you know, seeing the one trade deadline per season, you know, they're kind of taking it or they're kind of winging it, or not winging it, but they're just trying to figure out how it works. And then, you know, they're putting guys on waivers who are just going to be picked up instead of having the opportunity to trade them. So, you know, I think that's definitely interesting if the Reds would be willing to get rid of a guy like Alex Wood and stuff to save that money, because they've always been so stingy on payroll. And like you said, they opened with a record payroll this season, but it was still something like $50 million behind what the Cubs are spending. And, you know,
yeah, and like $7 million below league average even still.
Yeah, so for a team that has spent more money than they've ever spent on payroll, they're still not spending a ton compared to the rest of the league. So $3 million like that could actually mean something for the Reds in the future.
Yeah. It's a weird process to kind of break down because we've never been through this before, but I would be
sure. Actually, Arf, to your point, like it is interesting to see what teams are doing. And if you look at what the Yankees are doing, you know, they've actually had some bullpen issues and have bolstered their bullpen in a couple of different ways, including doing a minor league trade to get some guys who aren't on 40-man rosters. And so, you know, they picked up Joe Mantiply from the Reds for cash or whatever.
And David Hernandez.
And David Hernandez off of, I think, as a free agent, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. They signed him to a minor league deal. And watch David Hernandez rest his shoulder for a month and be a – Absolute nails reliever for the Yankees down the stretch. He's going to get a World Series ring at this rate. It's interesting as heck. And I know props to the Reds for being willing to do mid-season what so many teams in recent years haven't been willing to do, which is take on money. And that's what they committed to do this past winter also. But they got Kevin Gausman for nothing as a buy-low move. And who knows what happens with him over the next 40-ish games. But if he becomes a Derek Johnson reclamation project, he could be a legit number 4, number 5 starter for this team next year. He's got a year of team control left. If he continues to pitch terribly like he did for the Braves, you non-tender him and it cost you $2.5-3 million of salary to finish this season, and you found out. Freddie Galvis is the same way. Somebody claims Jose Iglesias and he decides to be a much more prominent free agent, not decides, that's the wrong word, but becomes a much more prominent free agent this upcoming season than he was last winter when he was brought on a minor league deal. You've got Freddie Galvis at $5 million to be your starting shortstop next year. And Freddie Galvis for $5 million, it is a 1.8 to 2.2 wins above replacement guy is fine. That's totally fine. And might even get a Great American Ballpark bump offensively there. They've used the ability to take money on from teams that didn't look like they were willing to spend it. Trevor Bauer also, you know, the Cleveland has been up against a payroll threshold over the last two seasons that's seen them kind of trade guys and do everything they can to balance the books. But Bauer on, you know, $18-ish million for next year wasn't something they were willing to spend. And the Reds said, fine, we'll take them from you. And obviously it cost them Taylor Trammell, but that's kind of the segue here in this episode of the Red Reporter podcast, because in trading Taylor Trammell and trading Yasiel Puig, it almost kind of gives you the signal that the Reds thought they had stumbled upon something in Aristides Aquino that this time last year would have sounded a little bit absurd. Aquino obviously has at times been in the top 10 of the Red Reporter community prospect rankings on the farm. He's been in the top 10 on MLB.com and Baseball Prospectus throughout the course of his minor league career. But he made a cameo appearance at age 24 last year after struggling at AA and pretty much got outrighted straight up off the roster this winter because the Reds had kind of said, eh, we want that 40-man roster spot more than what you've given us. He came back to the Reds. You know, every other team in baseball in theory could have signed him, but he came back to the Reds and is showing this year the kind of top-tier toolsy talent that I think the best and brightest prognosticators 4 or 5 years ago said, wow, this guy's got. What are your thoughts on what you've seen from Aquino so far? And how much of this you think the Reds front office legitimately could have seen coming? Because obviously nobody saw record-breaking number of plate appearances to get to 9 career home runs. But the fact is, he's a 6'5 guy who can hit the living hell out of the ball with a cannon for an arm in right field. He's toolsy. Like, there are reasons why he was as attractive as he's been for years. What are your thoughts on what you've seen from him so far and how much credit you can really give the Reds front office to turning things over to him at this point? Arf, how about you go first?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to see how this whole thing with Aquino has played out over the last couple of weeks. You know, I mentioned that I was at the game on Tuesday. And, you know, I'm always excited to watch Joey Votto hit and Suarez and, you know, some of these guys. But, like, Aquino was the one that I wanted to see on Tuesday night. You know, I love watching those other two guys play, but I was like, I've got to see Aquino in person. And watch him hit a 118-mile-an-hour laser, and you know, see him gun someone out from almost 102 in outfield. Of course, he, with my luck, he went like over four. But it's been pretty awesome to watch, because even though the Reds have over the last 4 or 5 days kind of played themselves out of playoff contention, like, he's still exciting and he's a reason to watch the games now. And I think, you know, the Reds have obviously seen something in him for, you know, Hank keeping them with them this long and, like, even being able to re-sign him after they released him and no one else picked him up. But, you know, they also still released him. So I don't think they obviously didn't see the record-breaking numbers coming, but I don't think they saw him being this good, or they would have, you know, they would have kept him on the 40-man roster in the offseason before, you know, before releasing him and stuff. But yeah, I can't remember his name, the hitting coach, for saying, being able to tweak something in him and say, I think you can be a lot better if you just do this little thing. And it's obviously worked.
Yeah, that's Donnie Ecker, right? I think was the AAA. Yeah. And it's worth emphasizing there that there was a major tweak. It was not just that they brought him back as the same old guy and said, try next year and see if it's different. He went through a major, major, major swing overhaul over the last calendar year. And admittedly, you know, it's hard to judge AAA numbers, especially in the International League this year, because they're using the Major League Baseball for the first time. And offensive numbers have absolutely exploded there. You've seen Josh Vanmeter knock the shit out of the baseball, frankly, and warrant a call-up when he's continued to do it when he's gotten to the big leagues this year. Brian O'Grady got a call-up earlier this year also because, in large part, he's just destroyed the baseball at AAA. Aquino had two. Like, the dude hit, 28 home runs in 73 games while also fighting a nagging shoulder injury. It's not like they knocked him off the roster. He's tweaked his swing, put up middling numbers this year at AAA, and they decided to give him a shot. No, he was knocking the absolute hell out of the ball at AAA and warranted the chance to find out whether or not I could translate. And so far it has in absolute spades. It's far from the first time that you've seen a guy who is now 25 years old, finally have it click and have to go through a lot of things to make it click. We were talking about this earlier as well. Other players that have taken till age 25 or so before they finally broke in and then took off afterwards. You've seen it in Todd Frazier in specific Reds history. Edwin Encarnacion, Beak, you mentioned him. He was obviously traded for Scott Rolen and put up some okay numbers with the Reds, but was traded in that deal in 2009 to Toronto, who then subsequently DFA'd him and stumbled into getting him back also. And then he went through a major swing change and took off offensively. Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, two other examples of guys who took till 26, 27, 28 before things clicked and all those tools finally came together and holy shit, they became offensive monsters. BK, what do you think, man? What have you seen from Aquino so far? And the heck is it? What do the Reds have in him, man?
I mean, it's about time the Reds actually got one of these guys, right? Like, I mean, I feel like I've been watching – I watch these guys come up for other teams, and I'm always like, man.
The Cardinals, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that he was a free agent over the offseason, and anybody could have picked him up. And, there's obviously been a lot written about him, both on Red Reporter and other places. I think, if you look at – you can – C. Trent Rosecrans, a friend of the show, has done with The Athletic recently, talking about his swing change and kind of going all the way back down to the ground up. There's been a lot of good stuff written about that. But, I think the thing that stands out to me with Aquino is that one thing that the Reds kind of knew even from the beginning is that, yeah, if you look at any of the scouting reports on him, even from years ago, it talks about the makeup of Aquino and kind of the tenacity that he's always kind of shown. Even when his swing wasn't really working for him, obviously to this extent, he's kind of a student of the game type and is always looking to learn, and it just kind of brings the right mindset, the right attitude to it. And I think that's it just kind of goes to show that obviously the Reds knew that and were willing to invest more in him than they already had. And, it's a testament to the Reds development department that, they've been able to get, now the player that they have out of him. And, really, if you look at him, if you think about, 2 weeks ago, we were saying, maybe give Aquino some time, give Irvin some time. I'm ready to pencil him into the lineup for the next 3 or 4 years in right field for the rest. Like, bat him clean up, do whatever. Like, it's working. If he can keep this up, it's a good problem for the Reds to have another guy that they need to get at bats to.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I also think it's worth mentioning that, as much as you want instant impact the moment any major change is made at the big league level and in major professional sports, what the Reds went through offensively to start this season and still, if you look up at their overall numbers, where they stack up with the rest of baseball, it's not been the most endearing first year for Turner Ward, the new hitting coach of the Cincinnati Reds. But you start to look at some of the things that you begin to see trickle out in the second half of this season. You start to look at how Ward and Donnie Ecker have worked with guys both at the big league and AAA level over the course of the last, 6-7 months. You've seen Josh Van Meter in a new stance over the last calendar year and how much better he's been since he took that on. Aquino, obviously, we just detailed as well. You saw Joey Votto stop choking up and start standing up straight at the plate. And over the last I think I looked at it last night. He's got an 844 OPS over his last 63 games, which is that Joey Votto-like? No, it's not, but he's also 35, and that's way better than he was to start this season. You started to see Nick Senzel stand a little bit more upright at the plate as well, with a little bit slightly open stance compared to what he'd been before. Philip Irvin, who just socked another double into the corner in the eighth inning here against the Cardinals, has absolutely been on fire this season. You almost have to wonder how much of this is finally starting to sink in and why the Reds' front office is so excited about what they've already got in place for 2020, because you're beginning to see those kind of things play out at the big league level with the players that they've got under control for next year. I guess how to transition to this, I guess, what are your thoughts on that and what the Reds might still want to try to address between now and the start of the 2020 season, considering they've done so much already to give themselves pieces to have for 2020. Because it looks like the ones that are going to be around beyond this year are beginning to kind of round into form already. BK, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the Reds are in for a tough offseason because with a lot of tough decisions to make, because you really, with the way that this roster is set up, really you have Trevor Bauer for one more year. You have, this core really is built to win in 2020. Now, what happens in 2021 is anyone's guess, but they really need to make 2020 count. And, they have a lot of guys who have shown promise this year, but I'm not sure how much of that is going to translate into a championship winning team next year. Like, when you look at it, there's still some inconsistency issues. There's still, we've been seeing this over the last week, right, where the offense has just kind of disappeared. And, even when, guys are hitting and, the season's in full swing, there still are some question marks there. I think that they could probably use another bat just at any point, like at anywhere, just to kind of shore things up and get some more consistency in the lineup. Obviously, I think there's definitely some bullpen issues that need to be addressed, especially now that they're big. They're two kind of bullpen anchors that they picked up prior to last season are now out of the picture. So I think that there's still some work to do, but I have a lot of faith in Dick Williams and Nick Kroll to think outside the box and come up with some interesting solutions to these issues.
Arf, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with what BK said, especially on the bat. I mean, as much as Tucker Barnhart, has been around this team, I think the Reds probably need an upgrade at catcher. Now, obviously, since he's come back off the injured list, he's been hitting a lot better. But for much of the last two seasons, he hasn't done much at the plate, which kind of makes not being able to get JT Realmuto this offseason hurt a little bit more. Definitely upgrading the bullpen, because even with Jared Hughes and David Hernandez not pitching like they did last year, there's still a ton of inconsistency still in that bullpen. I mean, Raisel Iglesias has been up and down all season. Michael Lorenzen's been better, but he's still, he pitched, I think, two games in that Cubs series without getting an out. Obviously the big one was on Sunday where he gave up the home run to Chris Bryant. He's still been pretty up and down. And then even guys like Robert Stevenson, who have shown a lot of flashes of being good, they've also had their bad moments. So I think that's probably the most pertinent upgrade that's needed is in the bullpen. But then after that, I would say, adding a bat, maybe if it's going out and getting Yasmani Grandal or something like that to
woohoo,
yeah,
make an improvement at catcher. I think that would go a long way to helping this team contend, because I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. No, I think you're 100% right. And obviously, Grandal's the one of my pet prospects of the last decade and former first-round draft pick of the Reds. But a guy who's played a decent bit of first base in his career also, and almost kind of as you watch Joey Votto into his age 36 season next year and the way he struggled over the last two seasons, the idea of getting Grandal 100 starts, 110 starts as a catcher and 20-ish starts at first base to spell him a little bit and also to spell Votto, having Tucker Barnhart as your backup, it's a pretty juicy fit as far as I'm concerned. Especially when you look up at the outfield and realize that in lieu of what we at one point thought seemed to be the what the front office's plan was, which was to sign Yasiel Puig long term, now they've got Aristides Aquino, Nick Senzel, Jesse Winker, Philip Irvin, all these pre-arbitration guys making league minimum. You got Eugenio Suarez signed long term to a fixed rate. You know exactly what he's going to cost. Freddie Galvis at $5 million to play shortstop is not outlandish by any stretch of the imagination for a starting shortstop in big leagues, if that's the route they chose to go. If you put Josh Van Meter at second base, he's also a pre-arb guy. The starting rotation is going to be expensive next year. It really is. You've got Trevor Bauer and Anthony DeSclafani in their final years of arbitration. You've got Sonny Gray signed. Luis Castillo will still be relatively cheap, as will Tyler Mahle as well. And you're going to have to spend some money on the bullpen. But if you look at the way the money's coming off the books, based on what they've shed this particular season, there still should be plenty of money to work with this particular offseason. And it seems like the Reds have positioned themselves well to be able to go out there and spend a little bit if they choose to. And also have found a pretty good core to where, as much as 2020 looks like it should be the season, even if it's not and it doesn't pan out that well, what are you losing off of the 2020 roster? You know, you're losing Trevor Bauer. You traded Taylor Trammell to get him. But aside from that, you're not really losing a whole lot else, you know? So I admire the way that the Reds have gone about kind of bridging this gap, finding a way to make August, at least the first 2 weeks of August, more competitive for the Reds this year than it has been in recent years, but also didn't mortgage the 2020 season in the process, or 2021, 2022, and might have just stumbled on some pretty good assets in the process also. So as frustrating as it's been to watch them kind of stumble this entire season, and obviously the last four games have been indicative of that, but it really has been a stumble this entire year. You know, they've been on the cusp of being much, much better than their record suggests they are. It wasn't a get over the hump year, but a lot of teams that eventually break out go through these kind of stumble years first. And hopefully, especially when you consider how much they're bringing back off of what this roster they've currently cobbled together is, I think it could set up pretty well for a 2020 run. So, I guess with that, we're running a little bit shorter than we have in previous times, but it's also the nearing the end of this particular game, and we've also been a pretty transitional go for 2019 / look forward to 2020 mode at Red Reporter. So maybe we wrap this one up a little bit close or a little bit shorter tonight than we have been. You guys have any final thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think we just have less to talk about this week. With the Reds not being in anymore, but
who knows? As I alluded to earlier, they do have 9 games in a row against the Padres, the Marlins, and the Pirates after this series against the Cardinals. And who knows? Maybe they go on one of those New York Mets style runs against some crappy baseball teams and make this more interesting than I anticipate. I'm not expecting it, but who the heck knows? Arf, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, all they got to do is. And if they sweep the Cardinals here, then they have those 9 games like you mentioned, and maybe sweep those. And you know,
they're 6 games over. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, like you said, it has been frustrating. But you know, looking back, I think someone at FanGraphs before the season started had projected the Reds to be like an 80-81 win team, and given the state of the NL Central, how competitive it can be, they might just be a team that sneaks into the wild card or sneaks into the playoffs if things fall right. Well, they started 1-8, But since then, they've been exactly a 500 team. So they've pretty much been the team that we've expected them to be. They've just kind of put themselves behind the eight ball that's at the start of the season and have never really been able to catch back up to that. Yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, it's been frustrating, especially once you get into August and you're playing competitive and there's some hope. And then it kind of just falls through when you lose four games in a row. It's been a lot more fun than sitting here like 20 games out in mid-August and it's just like, well, let's watch, you know, Lizalberto Bonilla throw a few innings here. It has been a lot better having expectations and hope to, you know, maybe in a month and a half you're hoping that you're in the playoffs or in the wild card instead of that hope going away in May. So, well, yeah, it's been frustrating. It's been a lot better than it could have been.
It's a step forward. Like, this team has been absolutely competitive. You know, like, with a few breaks here and there, this team is three games over 500 right now, and that means every game from here to the end of the season is relevant. There's, you know, I think if you took at the pool of data that you've seen from the roster the Reds have had for this entire year and you simulate it 100 times, they make the playoffs a couple times. You know, they do. Like, they're not too far off, and they're also at the point where they're not going to lose any of their best assets that they have right now going forward. And they've got the ability to add more. And I think that's the exciting point about where they are in this year five-ish of this rebuild, is that they've put together a pretty good team. It wasn't quite good enough this year, but they're keeping all the good parts going forward. And a lot of them have a lot of team control, and that's a pretty admirable spot to be in. So, for that, we'll wrap episode 12 of this rebooted version of the Red Reporter podcast. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us most everywhere, maybe not Spotify. Sorry, Baseball Jones. They're kind of complicated. But you can follow us on Twitter.com at Red Reporter. You can occasionally find our stuff on Red Reporter on Facebook at Red Reporter Fans. Certainly look us up at RedReporter.com, where we put a lot of this yapping into words and hit publish on stories. Check us out. We still will be following this team vehemently throughout the next 40-ish games of this season and into the offseason as we kind of figure out where this Reds team can find a way to make a playoff run realistic in their future. So for BK, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.